Hi, it's another edition of The Bandwagon. I'm Brian Moline.
And I'm Lisa Braltz. We're back.
We're back. Enough of you indicated that you liked what we did with episode one, that we're doing an episode two. So, it's been fun so far. And a new episode and a new song today, Lisa.
Okay, yes. The song today is the song Bandwagon. Mm-hmm. By R.E.M. It was a B-side to the single Can't Get There From Here. I'm totally dating myself. If you're interested in the actual record that it's from, it appeared on Dead Letter Office, which was sort of like a compilation of covers and B-sides. And I think they also cover Pale Blue Eyes by Velvet Underground. It's cool. So we decided to mix it up a little bit today.
Yeah, very good. So yeah, we'll see what we do next week. We might go back to the first song. We might keep this song. Who knows what
we'll do. That's the beauty of like being in the nascent stages of doing what we're doing is we can sort of try new stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So. A topic we talked about some last week, the Chicago Cubs. Their season has come to a crashing thud of an end.
Oh, man.
The World Series starts tonight. We're talking on Tuesday morning. The World Series starts tonight. The Mets and the Royals. Cubs are done. As I told you, I think, last week, Lisa, that regardless of how the season ended, I was going to be, you know, happy with the season as a Cubs fan.
Right.
But the way it ended, to get swept, just kind of anticlimactic ending to their season.
So speaking as an infrequent baseball watcher, I think I've told you, Brian, that in my childhood, I was a huge baseball fan. And I grew up watching the Braves in Atlanta and also the Cubs as a kid, back when the Braves played or their games were on WTCG. That was Ted Turner's network, but that's what it was called. And then we moved to Minnesota and I followed the Twins even when they sucked in the mid 80s. And then we were totally vindicated, you know, when they started winning World Series at the end of that decade in early 90s. Anyway, but I've sort of fallen off the baseball train a little bit. But I decided to start watching again because I did enjoy watching the Cubs when I was a kid, and it's really great to see them try to advance. And you and I talked about this. I could not believe how they fell apart so completely in the games that I watched. It was sort of like, seriously? And not to take anything away from the Mets. I mean, they played great baseball. You know, and of course the fandom, as like Jake Arrieta has a normal game for most pitchers, you know, goes five innings, gives up some hits, is not like the force that he was before. The fandom was just falling apart too. It was kind of amazing.
Yeah. I always have to be one of the hazards about watching games on social media is if you follow too many fans, you just see them going completely crazy in their Twitter timelines and their Facebook feeds. I try as often as I can to be the voice of reason, even when I really don't want to be the voice of reason.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not happy with what I'm seeing on the screen with, you know, the Cubs in one inning, I think it was in game three, committing two or three errors in that inning and, you know, and everything kind of falling apart there. I certainly wasn't happy about that, but I was not certainly on the trade everybody, fire everybody train at that point either.
Well, it's very interesting to me to see how people how teams, the psychology of teams and individual players, and how they were so dominant when they played the Cardinals. Like, it was great baseball, you know, and everybody was really excited about how they were doing. They were coming in ahead of schedule in terms of how the team had been sort of planned out. And then it just was such an abrupt return to the usual form, I guess. I don't know. I just, it was, I was so curious, like, do the players read their own social media? Do they talk, what do they talk about in the locker room after this? Like, do they avoid all newscasts? Because it's so pervasive now. It's not like it was even 10 or 15 years ago where it was just like the press. It's everybody's a coach and a manager and has an idea.
Yeah, I think one of the things that helps this Cubs team in that regard is I think their manager, Joe Maddon, has a really good way of keeping things in perspective. You know, he sees all that stuff. You know, he's fairly active on social media himself. He sees all that stuff. But I think he has a pretty good way of keeping it all in perspective and understanding that, hey, you know, we're a young team. This is our first postseason run. These guys are going through something they hadn't gone through before, increased scrutiny. In the playoffs, every team you play is going to be a really good team. There are no Cincinnati Reds or Milwaukee Brewers in there, 90-plus loss teams on your schedule. So the playoffs are a little bit of a different animal. And I think, you know, the one thing that I heard, you know, a lot of Cubs fans say you know, both in conversation and on social media as well, they just looked flat in that series against the Mets. They looked flat. One of the things that will make your team look flat every time is when you run into really good pitching.
Right.
Because you can't get anything started. You can't really start any rallies. There's nothing to get the fans going.
It's an amazing neutralizer.
Yeah, so your team just looks flat because you can't get anything started.
Yeah. No, again, like I said, not to take anything away from the Mets. They played great pitching. I do feel like this upcoming – so another team that I was a big fan of was the Kansas City Royals in the 80s because my grandparents lived in Kansas City and George Brett was playing and the whole Pine Tar thing happened and it was just – and they were good.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed the other night that they still play in the same park because of the waterfalls and stuff. So I'm always amazed to see like, wow, they've been playing in that park for like 35 years or however long it's been. This isn't like the marquee series that TV people like. They want those series with like L.A. and New York, or the Cubs would have been amazing. I think so many people would have tuned into that. So I'm not sure. What do you think? Do people lose interest when you have teams like Kansas City and the Mets playing? I mean, are people going to watch?
Well, I think, this will do okay because you do have New York involved. One of the major media markets involved there. In terms of the Royals, they're an interesting team to me. As just a general baseball fan, I enjoy watching them. And part of it is that they do things just a little bit differently. Most teams, Cubs included, are built around players who will take their walks, they will work the count, they will hit quite a few home runs. Mm-hmm. That's the way a lot of teams are built. That approach tends to produce a lot of strikeouts as well, which is one thing that kind of hurt the Cubs in the National League Championship Series. Too many strikeouts and not enough guys getting on base ahead of the occasional home run. The Royals are completely different. They don't take a lot of walks. They'll take a few. But their approach is to put the ball in play, and they have a lot of really fast guys on their team.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw an illustration of that in the American League Championship Series. In fact, what ended up being the series-deciding run, a player named Lorenzo Cain on first base was not running on the pitch, was not trying to steal or a hit-and-run or anything. Ball goes down the right field line. Right fielder throws it back in towards second base, which is usually the play you make in that situation to keep the runner from taking another base because you don't even think it's a possibility. The guy from first base is going to try and come all the way around and score. Third base coach waves him in. He scored really without a tag play even. He beat the throw by that much. And it's a very exciting play, and I think that's the kind of the brand of baseball that Kansas City plays, which is really kind of interesting to watch because you don't see that many teams do it.
I saw that play. I happened to catch that and remarked to my household that was actually amazing base running and base coaching, and it isn't something that you see very often. And it kind of got me excited because you had in these other series so many home runs and the focus on these crazy pitching duels or like six home runs in a game. And there are other elements to the game as well. Great fielding, good base running, really being really smart. I like watching baseball for those things too, those elements that actually make the game exciting. They don't score points necessarily, but they can, like on the play that you described. But I love those little smaller elements, not so visible elements of baseball. So just to stay on baseball for a second, then we can move on. We were talking off mic a little bit about the Mets, and so they now have a player, like the focus has gone off of Jake Arrieta because the Cubs are out, and more on Daniel Murphy. I don't even know what position he plays. I'm sorry.
Second base.
He's a second base baseman and has just been so clutch for the Mets throughout the series. And NPR has an article about him today on their website. The headline is "The Powerful Player to Watch as the World Series Gets Underway." And I was reading it, waiting to hear a mention of some of the, obviously they talk about his performance and how great he is. But he's also, I'm just going to read a little paragraph here. "For some of the faithful who proudly wear Mets orange and blue, however, cheering for Daniel Murphy right now is a bit more complicated. Last spring, former Major League player Billy Bean, who is gay, paid a visit to the Mets in his role as baseball's inclusion ambassador." So baseball has this position.
Mm-hmm.
"Murphy responded to a question about the visit, saying he, quote, disagreed with Bean's gay, quote, lifestyle." Mm-hmm. So I think that is probably a topic for a whole other show that we could talk about athletes being out. And, you know, you've had other sports where athletes have been out maybe in more individual sports like tennis or skating or sports like that. But these sports that are traditionally very masculine are played only by guys, you know, to have this sort of I don't want to call it a tug of war. What's the phrase? Tension mm-hmm. around this, especially as we head into the World Series and especially as things in the United States have changed with same-sex marriage being made legal this past summer. I'm curious if this – to me, sports are part of the cultural and social fabric of a country. I mean, they just are. And so I'm curious – to see as we move forward in the World Series if this is something that comes up, if TV touches that.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question. The World Series will be on Fox. Mm-hmm. Joe Buck will be the play-by-play announcer.
We have a whole other show about him, yeah. too, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, we could delve off into that very easily, but we won't right now. Joe Buck will be the play-by-play announcer. And the analysts... Harold Reynolds, I think, will be one of the analysts, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to remember who the other guy in the in that American League playoff booth was, because I think it's the same team that was doing the American League Championship Series will be doing the World Series. So, yeah, I don't know if they will discuss that at all or not. Maybe they'll decide, well, we only want to talk about what's going on right. the field, which, okay, that's your right, but I'm sure you will hear about some other off-the-field things throughout the series.
Oh, sure.
It'll just be interesting to see if this is one that they choose to discuss.
And I think social media will probably take some of that on as well. I think social media already has. I mean, I found out about this through Facebook, through a friend, because I haven't followed baseball that closely. I was chuffed to learn that there is, an inclusion ambassador in baseball, and that's really cool. But I think it'll be interesting to see if TV touches it this time. People will be tweeting through the game and they read those things. And so we'll just have to see what comes up.
Yep.
And to see if he has a great series. I mean, what if he falls apart? What if he just has a few base hits and that's it? You know, who's going to rise? Will it be him or someone else? Will it be someone from the Royals?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, as we've seen in the postseason over the years, it isn't necessarily the regular season heroes that come up in the playoffs. I mean, Daniel Murphy, by all accounts, is really just an average major league hitter. He's not
right.
He's not bad. He's not great. I think his career high in home runs for a season is 14. He's had 7 in the playoffs already, including 6 games in a row.
That's incredible.
With a home run.
And, you know, you just know, like, the analysts and the sportscasters are all, like, waiting for the next one. You know, there's definitely that feeling. And again, it thrills me in sports to see fans happy, even if I don't like their fans. There's still something about seeing people so excited by that. I think that's one of the great things that sports does is it brings people together. It brings people a little bit of joy. And we can segue there into soccer.
Mm-hmm.
So I watch a lot of English Premier League soccer, mostly by choice, often by just because it happens to be on in our house. We also watch the French League, which is Ligue 1, and La Liga, which is
Spanish,
and then Serie A is the Italian league. So we mm-hmm. are able to watch all of the – oh, and the Bundesliga. I can't forget the Germans. So
of course.
So we watch all of them. And, I think of, like, in professional football, American football here, like Green Bay and the people, like, painting their bodies and wearing mm-hmm. cheese hats and just going completely crazy. And then I look at the soccer fans in Europe in particular – and I think they're not wearing cheese heads and they're not painting their bodies by and large, but they are crazy.
Yes.
They are crazy. There have been books written about it. And I don't mean crazy necessarily in a bad way. But we were watching a game. Dortmund was playing a German team. And I can't remember who they were playing. And just the giant Illini flags that they mm-hmm. run around Assembly Hall. My husband calls it the most dangerous minute in sports. and we've seen them at soccer games, too. There are literally like 100 of them throughout the stadium. Giant, I'd be afraid of getting like somebody dropping one because they're not light. Everybody wears the same color. It can just, it's intense. They're singing all the time. You know, in baseball, there's always just kind of that cheering background noise. And then people get excited when one thing happens. There's always this amazing chanting, singing, yelling, noise. And yeah, when something great happens, everybody goes crazy, but it's kind of crazy to begin with. And I wanted to comment on how happy it makes me to see people really excited and also just really sad when their team loses, especially in the British, in the English Premier League. Now, all of those leagues are sort of in the middle of their season. They just started in August. Mm-hmm. So it'll be a while before they're playing anything like, you know, that means anything necessarily.
Right.
But in the United States, the MLS is now in the playoffs, and MLS is gaining lots of traction in mm-hmm. this country. Orlando is an expansion team, and they routinely get 40,000 people to their matches.
That's 40, impressive. 40,000
people. They're playing in the Citrus Bowl, so it's a big mm-hmm. venue. But that's like they're a new team. And they will be adding a women's team in Orlando here in the next year or two. And got the news also that Minnesota United will be joining the MLS in 2018 and are getting a new stadium, I think 20,000 people
in
St. Paul.
St. Paul, okay.
They just announced it, and everybody told me it was going to be in Minneapolis, and then they announced it was in St. Paul, and it's about 2 miles down the road from where I went to college, straight on the bus line. It's on the light rail. It's great for them, and Minneapolis-St. Paul is pretty into their soccer.
Now, I'll rely on you, Twin Cities girl, to tell me what are the dynamics of the Twin Cities?
Well, it's funny you would ask, Brian, because they're very similar to the dynamics between Champaign and Urbana, actually.
Okay.
Minneapolis is the larger city. It has more skyscrapers. It's more cosmopolitan. There are more places to eat. They are separated not by Wright Street, but the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
St. Paul is a lot more, residential. It has a thriving downtown, especially in the lower town district now. That also has skyscrapers, but it's just a little more neighborly, I would say.
Okay.
I've lived in both. I loved both very much. But it is amazing to me, even when I was up there recently, people in St. Paul were like, well, we just never get into Minneapolis. I'm like, it is a 10-minute drive. Your traffic here isn't even bad. It takes me longer to get to the west side of Champaign from Urbana than it did for me to navigate around the Twin Cities. It was amazing. So, but Minnesota United, since they got going, has had incredibly strong fan support. And they have the other thing that I love is like the fan clubs. Oh my gosh, they're so crazy. And so there they have, theirs is called the Dark Clouds.
Mm-hmm.
The Minnesota Dark Clouds. Dark Clouds gather. And they are
interesting.
They are crazy. They sing songs all the time. There's a song by the Ramones called I Want to Be Sedated, and they've changed the words to center around a player whose last name is Venegas. So it's like, I want to be Venegas. And they just start singing, and they do this a lot. And so it's good to see professional soccer sort of, you know, I don't think in this country will it ever be as popular as football or baseball or professional basketball. And I'm talking on the men's side mm-hmm. here. Probably not. I think a lot football, you know, another young person passed away due to a football related injury just over the weekend.
Yeah,
so
Chicago, yeah.
I feel like, yeah. So I feel like, you know, who the jury will be out on football for a long time, but it's really nice to see another sport take its place. In the constellation of sports.
Yeah, and I haven't yet been to an MLS game. I've been to a women's professional game up at Toyota Park in Chicago.
Yeah.
I saw when the Red Stars played there. I saw mm-hmm. them play up at Toyota Park. And I don't know what it is. If for me, at least, I've kind of peripherally followed the Fire here mm-hmm. and there because mm-hmm. they're the closest MLS team. But also, I don't know that they've ever been really good, you know, mm-hmm. like one of the very best teams in MLS. So they're really, this hasn't been that impetus for me to really jump on the bandwagon, if
sure.
you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. So we also watch a lot of women's soccer, too. So there is Frank DeFord may tell you otherwise, but there is actually a women's soccer league here in the United States, and Chicago has a team, the Red Stars. But watching those games, it was always amazing to me because it's like, you know, Portland. Places where the men's soccer teams were kind of in partnership with them. So the Portland Thorns and the Portland, whatever they're called. I can't remember what the guy's team is called. But
Timbers, maybe?
The Timbers. And, you know, so they kind of play in the same park and they work together. Houston Dash and the Dynamo are the same. The Red Stars, I saw the national women's soccer team play Germany in a friendly a couple years ago at Toyota Park. But the Red Stars were playing at, like, on a college field.
Yeah, it wasn't a community college up there, I think, in Naperville, maybe,
yes.
Something like that.
And so so they're playing on turf, and they're playing on these crappy fields, and they're, you know, you'd be watching the games on YouTube feeds that were terrible, and, you know, it's just not a league that has a lot of money in it yet. But I actually think that if the men's and women's teams work together, that can be beneficial for both. It gets more people going to the women's games. A lot of women who played on the national women's soccer team, who just were received by President Barack Obama in the White House mm-hmm. this morning, play on these teams. You can see Carly Lloyd play. You can see Alex Morgan play. Mm-hmm. My hope is that at some point women's soccer, too, will be elevated, and there will be more team partnerships in these cities.
So that's the professional side. Another side of soccer you've gotten to see up close and personal is the youth side of soccer mm-hmm. with your daughter Lily coming up through Park District ranks and playing on her high school team at Uni High and club teams and
yep.
everything else. I've seen it from a little bit different perspective. I've kind of seen, you know, one of the things I used to do in my previous radio life was call Little League baseball games
on the radio
in the summer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You did do that.
And when I started doing that in the early 2000s, there were between 25 and 30 different Little League teams in the CU Kiwanis Little League in Champaign-Urbana. That number has dropped, and I think at last check they were down around 15 teams or so.
Wow.
And a lot of that can be attributed, really, to the rise in the travel teams
mm-hmm.
because parents and kids don't want to do both because it takes too much time to do both.
Right.
And so that as a result, a lot of the community type teams have really seen the participation drop off.
And I think we can say that it's similar in soccer, although I will say that Urbana, and I can only speak for the girls side of things. My husband also coaches a 5th through 8th grade girls team, and mm-hmm. there are two of them in Urbana. And they haven't had any trouble fielding two girls' teams for that age group for a while. I mean, mm-hmm. I think they always have players. Not sure what it's like on the boys' side. And I know that there are some sort of middle traveling teams that aren't officially IFC, the Illinois Football Club, which mm-hmm. used to be known as Little Illini here. That's sort of the club team and travel team that everybody sort of thinks of here. And there are new other teams popping up that are starting to just schedule their own games and do their own thing. I know that Champaign's Park District has had trouble fielding enough girls for their teams. I don't know if that means that more of them are playing club. And like you say, the families don't want to try and do both. It's expensive, I will say. So I think of Ella Mazur, you know, who played for the Houston Dash and obviously the University of Illinois and Urbana High School. She was a Park District product. I don't think she played at the time Little Illini until she was probably 12, 13, 14 years old. So Park District is a great way for kids just to get active. I know my husband has had girls on his team whose parents have put them there and said, you are playing soccer because you need to move around. And so you're going to do it. And he's had other girls who play another sport for their school and then also play soccer. And so they'll run a cross-country meet for their school and then come to soccer practice or play a game on Saturday morning. So some kids are into that. But one thing about club, it's expensive. And I do think it sort of keeps kids who might have quite a bit of talent and who would have a lot of fun, it kind of keeps them from being able to participate at a higher level.
Yeah, and the other thing that I think it does is basically if parents are going to pay money for their child to be in a club sport, a lot of times what ends up happening is the child ends up focusing on that one sport. I don't know what it was like for you growing up. For me, I tended to play whatever sport was in season.
Same.
In the fall, I was in football. In the winter, I was in basketball. In the spring, I ran track. And I know that not every kid is going to like every sport, but the way I always looked at it, the way that most of my coaches looked at it was it kept you in good shape. It was a good way to, you know, see if you had other interests besides just football, for
mm-hmm.
instance.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back on that, I'm really glad that I played 3 sports. I think it was a really good way to get a broader set of experiences And was I going to be a professional in any of those three? By no means.
Right.
I didn't play any of them past high school, but I certainly enjoyed playing high school sports.
Well, and I think also being playing sports and having that experience is just like you are socially conversant in that sport. So if you played basketball, and I played basketball in high school, and I still follow basketball. And I follow pretty much all the basketball, although I'm not so hardcore on the men's professional basketball, but mm-hmm. certainly college basketball and women's professional basketball. And it just makes you conversant in that sport. Again, it's sort of that cultural thing where people can come together around sports and around athletics, not like who wins. I mean, that's one thing that we don't really talk about, you and I, so much about like the score and who won and what happened. It's more about the larger meaning of sports. And so being able to talk about like what happened in the high school soccer tournament or the NCAA basketball tournament or the World Series, I mean, playing those sports makes you a little more conversant and able to talk with other people and to, you know, offer your own opinion and
yeah.
sound like you know what you're talking about.
Exactly. Hopefully we sound like we at least have an idea of what we're talking about here on the bandwagon. Lisa, I think we'll probably wrap it up for this edition. As always, if people have anything they'd like us to discuss, they can find us via email, via Twitter. You're at?
At Lisa Brault on Twitter. And I want to know, like we talked about local youth sports. Tell us what it's like where you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everybody who listens, hopefully, is in Champaign-Urbana, so I'd be curious to know what it's like where you are. And Brian, you are at Twitter at?
Bmoline, W-I-L-L.
So yeah, tweet us.
Tweet us. You can email us. You can, if you're friends with us on Facebook, you can find us there.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of ways to get a hold of us. We hope you do. And thanks again for tuning in to The Bandwagon. I'm Brian Moline.
And I'm Lisa Brault.